Here's the radio happy hour, Dr. Bluckstein. Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock, Dr. Bluckstein. Dr. Bluckstein. Freaking news and pretty guests, north and south and east to west. Put your boundaries to the test with Dr. Bluckstein. Well, 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 I'm glad you're here. Sit on down and here you'll find Dr. Bluckstein. If you've got things on your mind, call Dr. Bluckstein. Dr. Bluckstein. Don't annoy, he'll throw a fit. Bubble chaos and punish it. Grab a chair, he's on the air. Dr. Bluckstein. Here on the radio, happy hour.
And welcome everybody to the radio happy hour. Vinny Bond is here.
Good evening.
And of course, my name is Dr. Bluckstein. I run this place. I am the arbiter. Is that the
head
right word?
Head muckety muck in charge.
I am the head
big,
muck.
The big kahuna.
I am the mid-sized kahuna. Thank you very much. Here's the deal for tonight's show. Now, normally, we only do this once, twice a year, so I don't like to make a practice of it, but we're pre-recording this show last Thursday. In other words, we're coming to you from the past right now.
Yeah, it's twice a year. Doc has to go get his female hormone treatment over in Switzerland, and he can't do the show from there because for some reason Skype doesn't work in Switzerland.
Right,
so
right.
We have to record the show.
Right, and one of my treatments is coming up this week, so I can't do it live. But by the magic of radio and time machines, we're coming to you from the past right now. We're coming to you from last Thursday. And the reason I wanted to, you know, ordinarily when I would pre-record it, you would never know because I do it plausibly live. You know, so by Tuesday, so much will have changed because so much is happening today. And I'm kind of glad to be on the air today because today is such a crazy day in the world of pop culture because we lost what's wrong?
Yeah, in the last 36 hours.
In the last 36 hours, we lost – in the last 24 or 18 hours, we lost a lot of pop culture people. We lost and we'll get to why Dangerous Lee isn't here. But we lost a 70s icon today, Farrah Fawcett. We lost an 80s icon today, Michael Jackson. I just hope Kurt Cobain is okay.
Fill something in there, dude. Do you have a groan noise on that switchboard? you know, and let's go back a few more hours, and we lost a 60s icon the day before.
Who, Ed McMahon?
60s, 70s, 80s, and that, yeah.
Ed McMahon. But
great. I thought, I mean, you know, normally you have to wait a month to get the three.
I know. It's kind of, nice that all three happened at the same time. So
just think about the person in the Deadpool who had all three on that list.
Exactly. But think about poor Farrah Fawcett, Michael Jackson stepping in and ruining her big day. No one's going to be talking about Farrah Fawcett.
I'm very sad about Farrah, you know. Ryan O'Neill had said that they were going to get married. Finally, you know, wasn't able to happen. You know, Farrah was definitely an icon.
You must have loved her, huh? Back in the day.
No, I don't know. My type has always been dark haired women.
So you like the other Angel?
Kate Jackson was cool.
Yeah. And of course, the reason Dangerous Lee isn't here is because she is a very big Michael Jackson fan, and she couldn't handle going on the air. And I find that incredibly silly. She didn't know the man, but what am I going to do, right?
I don't know how silly it is. I mean, I can remember the day I found out Thurman Munson had died. I was pretty broken up that day. I can remember the day I found out Jerry Garcia died. I was pretty broken up that day. I mean, you know, there are people in our lives that, you know, and that was within a week.
No, that was not within a week.
I'm sorry, this wasn't within a week.
It you're thinking of Mickey Mantle, who died within a week of Jerry Garcia.
Mickey Mantle and Jerry Garcia.
Right, right. The reason I know that is because of the New York Post. They had a great front page headline where it had a picture of Mickey Mantle next to a picture of Jerry Garcia, who had died, and on top of their faces it said going, going, gone.
We taped a show that never aired up in Boston, you know, because those were two people that, you know, they were definitely iconic to me growing up at two different points in my life.
Yeah.
You know, as the young kid, Mickey Mantle, you know, being a huge Yankee fan, and then, you know, into my teen years and, you know, into college, and, you know, I was a deadhead, I became a deadhead, and I saw Jerry, you know, play a lot of times. I mean, I was leaning on the stage for three concerts with him. I've got some great pictures of Jerry that I took concerts. That was Mickey. But, you know, Mickey was sort of, you know, it definitely hurt, but you knew it was coming. Thurman was a shocker.
Right. But like they say.
Which Michael Jackson is.
Michael is a definite shocker, but the show must go on.
Show must go on. This is true. You know, I was actually completing a post for tomorrow on the BigLeatherCouch.com, you know, honoring Mr. Jackson and his life.
And let's just say, and we're going to do a whole Michael Jackson retrospective later on in the show, where I'm going to play clips of the various times we talked about Michael Jackson. Obviously, the subject came up often because Dangerous Lee is a big fan. But let's not lose sight of one thing, because when somebody dies, all you're going to hear about are the beautiful and the nice things. And granted, as a performer, Michael Jackson, there may not be anybody better as a pop star. He is what pop is. He invented the genre. I think it's fair to say that. But he's not a well person. Well, now he's not so good at all. But he wasn't a good person. I mean, the fingers of the pedophile fingers were pointed at him, and where there's smoke, there's fire. He was never convicted. But you know, read between the lines, the deals that were made in the back rooms. He's not a good guy.
Well, you know, he certainly. I mean, and again, as I state, you know, we all know that, you know, there were problems in his personal life, and you know, that aside. Then my post talks more about the music of it, because you can't deny, outside of the personal stuff, you know,
the impact he
has had on the music industry for the last 50 years.
Good or bad, that's debatable, because without Michael Jackson, there's no Britney Spears, there's no Justin Timberlake. Did he create good or did he create bad?
Well, you know... in some instances, some of that stuff is good. In some instances, you cringe at it. but you can't deny what he did. I mean, Thriller is arguably the biggest selling album in the history of the music industry.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's obviously various reports on how many, you know, did it sell, you know, worldwide sales somewhere between 47 million and 109 million. You know, it's a pretty big range if you ask me, but
yeah, well.
It was double diamond status in the U.S. with 28 million shipments certified. That's huge.
Yeah, yeah.
28 million in the U.S. alone.
Yeah, and obviously that'll never be broken because the music industry is so different now.
Well, yeah, now it sucks.
Right. Well, and people buy music differently than they did back then. So that's a record that will never be broken. You knew he didn't want to do it, but did you think he'd go to these lengths not to do that Jackson 5 reunion?
He had definitely said he wasn't going to. The family was definitely upset at him when he booked the show in London, his comeback tour. But watching the stories today, I mean, there are people who are saying, you know, there was just no way he had the energy to put on one show, no less do any sort of a tour.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they were trying to bring in, you know, people to help with his physical fitness, and it was very interesting on CNN just a little while ago. They had the family attorney slash spokesman, I think his name is Brian Oxman, and he pretty much said, you know, I've been telling people that this was going to happen, and no one would listen. He was on a lot of prescription drugs. He pretty much put it all on the handlers, you know, those unnamed people who are, you know, find themselves around these people.
And they're always
in their ear.
They're always looking out for the best for their celebrity of choice.
Sure. But you have to think, you know, I mean, he was saying, you know, that discussions in the family had been taking place about Michael dying. Well, you know, the family's pretty fractured to begin with, so it's hard to, you know, expect them to come in and try to, you know, on the white horses and save the day. So it's, I mean, in some ways, I mean, in all ways, it's a very sad story. I mean,
yeah.
The guy's 50 years old.
Yeah.
He's just going to be 50 years old or 51
He was going to turn 51 in August. Let me see who this is, because it may be our first guest. If it's not, we'll do our Michael Jackson retrospective now. 212, who's there?
You and I will make a pact. We shall bring salvation back. When there is love, I'll be there.
I'll be there. Sing it with us, Vinny.
I'll be there.
Million years.
That is Justin the Mouthinator. Here he is.
Mouthinator. You are incredible, and Michael Jackson is dead.
Yeah.
That is one last person to screw up a child's life. Gone. Goodbye. Thank you.
So you're in the camp of good riddance, huh? You got to acknowledge his music, though.
You know what? I don't have to acknowledge his music, because if you're sleeping in a bed with a child and you're going and spending a lot of money with publicists trying to turn that around and try to convince people that you're a normal person for doing that, that's a bunch of bullshit. I don't care if you row your boat. You're a wacko, jacko.
And let me just say before we continue that later on in the program, we will have Brad Thor, author of The Apostle. He's a favorite of the Radio Happy Hour. He is one of the best authors in the entire world, and he traveled the world to bring us this new book. We will talk to him a little bit later on. We're also supposed to have The Steps, the band The Steps. Now, if you remember a few weeks ago, they missed their spot on the Radio Happy Hour, and because they're
missed The Steps?
They missed the step, exactly. Exactly. Very nice. Yeah, here we go.
Thank you.
A little slow. My bad.
You're really slow. I'm going to be there real soon, dude.
I know. Vinny's going to be taking over the board soon. I'm going to be relieving myself of all these menial tasks and just concentrate on entertaining the folks, like Bill O'Reilly would say, the folks. Anyway, the Steps missed their step the last time they were booked. I rebooked them. Because they're friends with Colette from the Edible Red band, and she's always been very good to us. So why not give them another shot, The Steps? But they're already 10 minutes late, again.
You know what? They're out of step. Goodbye. They should be with Michael Jackson. Adios. See ya.
All right.
Steps.
But let's do our Michael Jackson retrospective now. Might as well, and then we'll talk to Justin a little bit more, because I do want to bring up the governors with Justin.
Mm.
All right.
Do we have to?
Well, you know what? I don't know if we have to, because by next week it could be old news. That's the problem with pre-taping these things.
Yeah,
coming to you from the past.
But you know what? There are so many governors who sperminate around that it'll be another governator by the time this airs, so it'll be an evergreen interview about the governor.
TheMouthinator.com.
And I might want to add
Mouthinator.
Mouthinator, like Terminator, only with my big frickin' fat mouth.
The Mouthinator.
You wanted
Thank you.
You wanted to add?
Well, I was going to add something, but then I thought, I'm not going to do that.
Okay, that's a very rare thing for your filter to be up and working.
Are you accusing me of sleeping with children and being a whack job and holding my crotch and doing the robot and doing the same moves for the last 50 years?
Well,
man was a scam?
Maybe not all of them, but definitely at least the last four.
Yeah, I think I've actually seen him grabbing a crotch.
There's just no doubt in my mind when he was European's answer to Michael Jackson that that he was.
Listen, if I needed to grab my crotch, it was to scratch, not to do a dance and think that I was any more masculine than I was.
Because you were, you know, it's funny, Justin. Here's your music in the background. He kind of had, you were going for his life in a way, right? You were trying to be a big-time pop star.
I was definitely, turn that fucking music off.
It's your creation.
I was definitely not going to be anybody's wannabe Michael Jackson, that is for sure. I think that Justin Timberlake was definitely mirroring his image after Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was not in my repertoire.
Fair enough. The steps are here, but we're gonna, since we started with you, Justin, we're gonna stay with you and take the steps.
Hello.
Hey, who's there from the steps?
This is Will from the steps.
Will from the steps. How are you? Here's our agenda.
Good, how are you?
Great. Here's our agenda. I'm going to keep you on hold for a little bit. Okay. We're going to do a little Michael Jackson retrospective, and we'll get to you in about 10 minutes. Fair?
That sounds good.
All right. Hang in there.
All right.
Enough of you. All right, so here's what we're going to do, since Dangerously isn't here to give us a Michael Jackson retrospective, and she's the real fan. I'm going to play clips from the various times that we spoke of Michael Jackson on this program.
I love Michael Jackson, but I'm afraid of my music.
The subject came up often, and we'll just go through some of it. Good?
Sure.
All right.
Bring it on, dude.
All right. Here is when we had rapper / comedian True Dogg, the, what did he call himself? The homo thug. Okay. He called himself the notorious homo thug, the rapper comedian. And this was back last August.
Why was Michael Jackson recently admitted to the Betty Ford Clinic? It turns out he had a 12-year-old crack addiction. No, you gotta keep going. Go.
Play it.
How does Michael Jackson pick his nose? From a catalog.
Right off.
Go.
I'm trying to. This isn't the easiest dashboard to navigate.
You need my help.
What's the hardest thing to move from a little boy's underwear?
Oh my God.
Michael Jackson's makeup.
Come on.
What did a lady say to Michael Jackson on the beach?
What?
Excuse me, you're in my son.
Oh
my God.
Hit it.
Oh,
hit the music. Hit the music.
Why did Michael Jackson phone the musical group Boys to Men?
Oh, Lord. Why?
Because he thought it was a delivery service.
That's my favorite.
Eat up. Last one. Now, when do you know it's bedtime at Michael Jackson's house?
When?
When the big hand touches the little hand. Thank you. Thank you. We love you, Michael. Thank you for all you've given us.
Yeah.
And, of course, the one that he forgot was, what is black and comes in little white cans?
What?
What?
Michael Jackson.
Wow.
Okay, what a tribute this is to the poor guy.
The king of plop.
Come on, he's dearly departed. Go easy on him. Then in...
Just because you're dead means
sorry,
that you have
Justin,
to erase the fact you were a pedophile?
No, you're right. I brought that up earlier. No, you're absolutely right.
I don't have a... But when you start to talk about the music industry, you have to give credit where credit is due.
Who gives
okay,
a shit
a
about
other,
that?
No, he's right. He is the king of pop.
There are other people who you can... put a timeline on in the music industry because they represent a period, and Michael Jackson represents 60s, 70s, 80s in this country and in the world.
He sang a few songs during that era, and as far as being the king of pop,
the largest
he self-named himself that.
Had seven singles off of one album.
And I think it's fantastic.
Stay
God bless
for
him.
80 weeks in the top 10.
And should I jump out of the window because the man was on the Billboard charts? It's so boring. It's made up of out of nothing just to sell more records and to be a television show with an award every year. But it's blowing up in their faces because now the everyday person can create a fantastic record off of their laptop. They don't need these machines to tell them who's the king of pop, who's the queen of soul, who's the husband of rock and roll. It's all a bunch of marketing crap.
All right. Then in March, Michael Jackson did his press conference to announce his big London tour, or not really a tour. He was doing it all in one arena.
I called that.
You did. You predicted that it was going to be. And we talked about Michael Jackson then.
Yeah.
Did you see the Michael Jackson press conference on Thursday?
Yes, I did.
Tell everybody what Michael Jackson, and I use Michael Jackson in quotes, said.
He's going to be doing like 20-plus concerts at, what is that, O2 Stadium in London in July?
Yeah.
Wow, jeez.
Yeah. Now, I don't think that was Michael Jackson doing that press conference.
Yeah, I saw that silly article you posted saying that they found Michael Jackson, the real Michael Jackson, dead. I'm like, what is this, the Inquirer story?
That was The Onion, and that was funny. I put that on Facebook, I think. But, no, I really don't think that was really Michael Jackson. It didn't look like him. It looked like a Michael Jackson impersonator.
No, please. That was
and I have audio proof. Listen. All right, you ready?
Uh-oh. Yes, I'm
These
ready.
Are All right, now, I want everyone to be honest here and tell me if I'm way off base, okay? All right. Here's the first cut. This is from the press conference. Listen to how deep his voice is.
Thank you all.
I mean, that does not sound
like that's his normal. That's his normal talking voice. What are you talking about?
You're saying he puts on the high female voice?
He hasn't done the high thing in, like, man, since, like, the 80s, late 80s, he hasn't talked like that.
Which is the last time you heard him talk.
Is that the last time you heard him talk? I don't know. Listen, does this sound like him? It sounds like a Michael Jackson impersonator.
Oh.
I just want to say that these... these will be my final show... performances in London. This will be it. This is it. And when I say this is it, it really means this is it.
That's Michael Block saying, give me a break.
Vinny?
It definitely sounded like him in the middle section.
In the middle section.
Well, yeah, but you're not. But they didn't switch people in the middle of the press conference.
No, he just had to be a bad impersonator, and for a second there, he sounded like him. Listen to the third guy.
I'm thinking it's him, Doc. I'm definitely thinking it's him.
Here's the real Michael Jackson, and afterwards they're going to play the character.
I am particularly upset by the handling of this mass matter. By the incredible, terrible mass media.
You are not using
at every
that
opportunity,
clip.
The media has dissected and manipulated
like
these allegations to reach their own conclusions.
It's a different tone of voice, my God.
It is if you connect it with the visuals, I tell everyone to go to YouTube and watch it. It doesn't even look like him. It looks like a Michael Jackson impersonator. His face
looks
too good.
It looks like him. That's the way he's been looking for the past 10-some-odd years.
He had a nose and everything. Here's Michael Jackson back to back.
Are we really entertaining this?
Yes, because like Vinnie Bond, I want to one day look back in this and say I cracked the code.
I think you're going to lose out on this one, my friend. But go right ahead.
This is Michael Jackson saying that.
You picked your wars, dude.
I picked it.
Right. Isn't he retarded? It's so stupid.
Travis, back me up here, buddy.
Don't do that.
It doesn't sound like him. I haven't heard him.
Come on.
How do you know the guy that you just played?
It doesn't sound like him to me.
Thank you. This is just how silliness gets started right here.
just because he doesn't agree with you doesn't mean you have to jump down his throat. He's a guest here, Travis.
I haven't jumped down it yet, man.
Please, Travis, accept my apologies on her behalf, okay?
If I jump down anybody's throat, it's going to be yours, Blockstein, okay?
All right, now here is Michael Jackson. Now, this is him saying the same thing. He's going to say, I love you twice. The first one is the fake one. The second one is the real one. You can see a very clear difference.
I love you. I love you.
Now, can you tell me that's the same person?
Well, how do you know the second one isn't the fake one?
Because the second one is him with his press conference.
Tone of voice, my friend.
It's a different voice.
I love you. I love you.
You silly. You guys are silly. Well, not you guys, but just you, Blockstein. Just you. It's just you, baby.
Travis?
I don't know, man. You know, I'm saying, what am I, you know, I'm saying, come on. Let's be for real.
I love you. I love you.
The fake one sounds like a man, and the other one sounds like Michael Jackson. So I don't know what to
say.
You guys are too much.
No, here's a guy that's got an open mind, because yes, you're right. You're right.
I got an open mind, too.
I love you. I love you.
You know, come on.
I love you. I love you. It's not even close. It's so clear to me.
I love you. I love you.
Is there a consensus in the chat room for this?
The chat room was probably like, can we move on with this crap?
And then we continued the discussion that same day with actor Corey Feldman. Hey, Corey, before you go, could you settle an argument for us? We were talking about this earlier, and nobody knows Michael Jackson like you know him. It was my contention that did you see the press conference on Thursday?
This is it. This is it.
Yes. I do not believe that that was actually him. I thought it was a Michael Jackson impersonator.
Oh, God.
Why, because his voice was too deep?
Exactly.
Yeah, well,
he was listening to the show, Corey. You were listening to his nonsense.
No, I honestly, no, I was just a guess. That was a blind shot in the dark. But I'll say this much. Everybody's got to grow up at some point.
like we said, he stopped taking his hormones.
Oh, my God.
You know, look, at a certain age, I'm going to explain this to you guys once, okay? At a certain age, Courtney, this is good for you to hear, too. At a certain age, you hit this thing, it's called puberty. the voice drops. You tend to get follicles of hair in strange, ornate parts of the body.
Ornate.
And you may even have a little kind of tickling feeling down in your private areas. So between all of that, I think that pretty much explains the sensation that we've all experienced in watching that conference.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes our Michael Jackson tribute.
I love Michael Jackson, but I'm afraid of my music.
All right, Justin, thank you. I got to move on to our next guest.
Oh, well, thank you, Dr. Blogstein.
You're a good man. We'll talk to you next week. By the way, everybody, Sean Amos is on vacation, so we will not be playing the pop quiz today. The
well,
GetBack.com
pop quiz. In Hollywood, adios.
Adios, amigo.
Bye, Vinny.
Bye. Have a good night, bud.
You too, guys. Bye, Doc.
The song is called
Give It Up.
It's the Steps. They're out of Austin, Texas. Who do we have again? I forgot already.
William.
William, man. What role do you play in this fine band?
I sing and play guitar.
So that was you?
That was me.
Excellent. I got to tell you, Will, you said, right?
Yeah.
William.
Yeah. I do that with names all the time. I got to either write it down or just say it over and over again to remember it. William, you guys are good. I really like your music.
Thank you very much.
We were disappointed the last time when you didn't make it, and this time when you were late, I'm busy bad-mouthing you, so don't listen to the beginning of the show, okay?
No, it's cool. I'm sorry about that.
No,
William, he's a little high-strung. You just have to understand. How'd you guys get together?
I guess we just met in high school, and it kind of took off, like, I guess right when I was getting out of high school. Those guys were still in there for a few more years, so I'm a little bit older, but, I guess once we got a manager, it's kind of when it got more serious.
This is really music the way it is supposed to be. And it's funny, we're talking about Michael Jackson a lot. You don't really hear a Michael Jackson influence in your music.
No, I didn't really listen to much Michael Jackson growing up, even though I respect the man.
Sure.
I'm not too familiar.
Sure, yeah. You are a band, an old school band with instruments. And I'll play more for you, Vinny. It's good stuff. This is a band that I know that fans of rock,
mm-hmm.
and you know, as far back as classic rock, and will enjoy. Do you find that, Will?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I think that's what we all kind of listen to, so we try to kind of bring that out in our music. But I don't know. Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah, who are you listening to? Who are your influences?
I guess collectively we all like the Rolling Stones, and you know, it goes pretty far back, but I really like personally listening to old country music, like Gram Parsons, and songs that have stories behind them. I really like those kind of songs, like Townes Van Zandt.
It's funny, someone just wrote in our interactive chat room, Southern rock and grunge meet. And I think you just sort of kind of brought that out in your description of who you listen to.
That's awesome.
You know, because I consider, you know, the Stones were probably the first real grunge band.
I love Nirvana and all those bands. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you mentioned country music, and what's interesting is country music now versus country music back 10, 20 years ago is very different. Country music now is what classic rock was. In other words, fans of the Eagles' latest album was under a country label, right?
I don't really know. I haven't heard that record.
Yeah, the Eagles was a country label. I believe Bon Jovi did a record on a country label, and it's not like it's...
Well, a lot of people have tried to cross over and do the country thing. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily worked out for them.
Right, but it's not country like country we remember. It's not Willie Nelson, Kenny Rogers, or what's that? It's not Achy Breaky Heart. You know, it's classic rock.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. I don't really like the mainstream country you're talking about, like Rascal Flatts and like those kind of artists. I don't really connect with them as much. I don't know. It's not the same. But yeah, it's still identified as country music.
Yeah. Well, just like if you say rock, how many forms of rock are there? And it's the same thing within country.
Yeah.
It's same thing within country. I mean, that's the umbrella label for a lot of genres. People will go back and, I'm a Southern rock guy. That's where my heart lies. You know, the Allman Brothers and Marshall Tucker and that whole Lynyrd Skynyrd. And then I go out to San Francisco. But, you still get some of that crossover to, a little bit more country than you're talking about, especially since I moved from the New York area to Memphis. Country is certainly...
Right.
Gotten more in my life.
I'm going to play a clip from Dagger. Now, this song is good. It's very violent, right? William, what are you doing in this song? Listen to this.
I guess that kind of had like the that's a good example, actually, because I was trying to write that song with the story behind it. It's like a kind of like a murder ballad, so I guess it's a little bit dark, yeah, but it's basically just about some guy that's just, kind of on a killing spree.
Yeah, so here's the very uplifting song, Dagger.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. William, what is keeping you guys from really blowing up? Because I don't understand it.
Well, thanks. That's a really nice compliment. I don't know. I think those guys, half the band just got out of high school. So it's like our first chance to really, go out and play. So for the most part, we're just kind of getting started. I think we have to pay our dues, and really like work hard, and then maybe we'll see some success down the line.
So tell us about the rest of the band, please.
What's that?
Tell us about the rest of the guys in the band.
I'm sorry, did you ask how old?
No, just, who they are and what they play.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Z Lynch, he plays drums, and then my cousin Sam, he plays guitar, and then Stephen Ross plays bass.
All right. Well, listen, at the end of the program, I'm going to be playing the entire version of Push.
Oh, cool.
So you said you're older than the other guys, so they just got out of high school. So now it's ready. You're ready to hit it big, right?
Yeah, that's the goal, at least.
What kind of venues have you been playing?
Well, we just got done with our first leg. We're actually back in Austin right now on a little break, but we were actually just in New York. We played Webster Hall, and that was definitely a really fun show. And then we've just kind of been playing shows like in the Northeast for the last month, and then we're going to go up to the West Coast, like, I guess, in a few weeks, and we're playing, like, I think, like, 6 or 7 shows in California, so that'll be really fun.
And your website is wearethesteps.com.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great.
Well, I thank you for joining us, William. We will definitely be listening to Push at the end of the program, and we will be visiting your website. We will be buying your music. We will be looking for you in the future. And I know it that you guys are going to be big. So please do me a favor and come back when you're a A-list celebrity. Don't forget us.
All right. Thank you very much.
Because we're easily forgotten.
I'll never forget that.
Okay, good luck to you guys.
Thanks.
All right, have a great night. All right, moving on, we will go right to our next guest because we do not keep a man like this waiting. His name?
Please, no.
We do not keep a man like this. I mean,
he comes armed.
Yeah, if you see the picture of him in this magazine, the Chicago, what magazine is this that I'm looking at, Brad?
Michigan Avenue?
Yes, Michigan Avenue magazine. If you see a picture, it, Google it, because you'll find it. You'll find it on bradthor.com also. There's a picture of him standing in like a Muslim wear, or like a, one of those scarves, those Taliban scarves, right? What do you call them?
We call it the Muj scarf, the Mujahideen scarf.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, he's wearing a Mujahideen scarf, a big rustly beard, sunglasses, and a really huge weapon.
A huge weapon.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a double entendre. What's going on?
Well, let's just say Brad Thor is packing.
Yeah, Brad, yeah, hey, that's a good reputation. I like that. Let's make sure that gets spread far and wide.
Brad Thor, of course, is our favorite author. He's written several New York Times bestsellers. Most of them are number one. And if they aren't, they're number one in my heart. His new one is The Apostle. It goes on sale tonight, or today. It's on sale right now. Go to your bookstore. In fact, stop listening. Run to your bookstore. Buy the book. And then come back and listen to us on the archive. That's fair, right?
There you go. I like that. I like it. I like that a lot. Open up another window on your browser. Zoom over to Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. Or your favorite independent bookseller's website, and snap it up, and we'll keep talking.
That's right. And the thing is, we're going to be here. I mean, this gets recorded, archived forever, get it on iTunes. But you want to get to the bookstore before this book is sold out, because it'll go fast, and then you'll have to wait for them to print more. And you're going to want a first edition, especially if you're going to go get it signed by Brad while he's on tour.
And as soon as you crack open the book and you start reading the first page, you're hooked.
You guys are fantastic. Let me know how you can mail the check.
It's just the truth. I mean, you know, it was just like, okay, bam, and I couldn't stop, and there I am sitting at my desk at work, and the book's open in the on the corner, and, you know. Okay, let me just go over and I'll read a few more pages, and okay, I'm just trying to get something done, but I got to read the book.
It's like crack for literate people. I love it.
Yes.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
So, Brad, what makes The Apostle so authentic is that you lived the life of what you wrote about. Now, I've seen you speak several times and heard you in several interviews, and the you do this whole spiel about don't write what you know, write about what you don't. Do that thing for us, so I can't do it justice.
Well, the worst piece of advice that writers get when they're starting out is write what you know. And I tell people that's terrible. If that was true, there'd be no J.K. Rowling, no Ray Bradbury. There's other writers that say the same thing. You should write what you love to read because that's where your passion is. I mean, and that's very, very true. I've always enjoyed the type of books that I write, international thrillers, international political thrillers. I mean, the Ludlum books, when Ludlum was writing them, and so on and so forth. So there's also a line from Henry David Thoreau that says how vain it is to sit down and write when you have not stood up and lived. So, I'm so fascinated by the special operations community and what our operators do when they go out away from the flagpole and go into Indian country to smoke bad guys and gather intelligence and everything. That when I got the opportunity to shadow a black ops team in Afghanistan, I leapt at it. I thought, wow, you know, there's people out there that dream of pitching for the Mets or, you know, playing basketball for the Knicks. And my thing was shadowing a special ops team, and I got to do it. It was probably the most exciting thing I've ever done in my life.
And by the way, if you do dream of playing basketball for the Knicks, I'm sure they'll take you. I mean, they need all the help they can get. But how do you? But you just can't decide. I'm flying out to Afghanistan. Let me find a group of soldiers to hang out with, and maybe they'll let me come along.
Yeah, I was like, I wasn't standing on a road outside Jalalabad saying, you know, we'll pull a trigger for food. You know, I didn't have a big cardboard sign that said that. I'm fortunate enough that I threw the Apostle is my eighth book, and I've developed a lot of contacts in the special operations community, in the intelligence world, in other places, and I happen to have relationships, and there was a team that said, you know what, come on over. We'll show you how we do what we do. You want to see what it's like to be Scott Harvath? Come with us. We'll show you what it's like. And they did. I mean, it was amazing.
So how'd that come about? Did you call them? Did they call you? Did they say, all right, we're going at 0900, pack up now? How did it all go down?
I've been getting some great praise over the years from people who said, you know, you give a voice to the people who technically don't exist. And this particular team, they were fans of my books and said, hey, they contacted me through other people I knew in the community and said, we'd really like you to consider coming over and spending some time with us. It was just that they reached out to me through some people I knew and they said, hey, this is not official. This is not government sanctioned. If you get smoked while you're here, you can't sue Uncle Sam. And that's how it came together.
Yeah. And in an interview I was reading, here's what you said. So the only two requirements that you were given in preparation for your journey were to make sure you were in top physical condition and to have all your affairs in order. I mean, how does your wife let you go on a mission that is off the grid? Nobody knows the people that you're going to exist, and nobody knows that you're going with them. They tell you to get your affairs in order. Here's a wife, and I've met her, very sweet lady. You're definitely dating or married way above yourself, Brad. You're a lucky man. How does she let you just go off to Afghanistan?
You know, I did marry well above my station. I married just this amazing woman who said, my job as your wife is not to stand in your way with what you want to do with your life. She said, you can walk out tomorrow and get hit by a bus. She said, so you, if it's what you want to do, go do it. And you have my blessing. You have my support. And that was it. And I grew that big beard before I went over. But the guys on the team said, you tell your wife, but don't tell anybody else, because what you'll have is 3 months of friends and family trying to talk you out of going. So the only person who knew was my wife, and I told everybody else, oh, I'm editing a new book, and I let my beard grow until all the editing is done. And people bought that hook, line, and sinker, although for the last 7 books, they've never seen me grow my beard.
Could you imagine if you went
Could
you imagine if you went to Afghanistan and actually got hit by a bus there?
Oh, wouldn't that have been ironic, huh?
Don't you think?
I mean, I saw the publicity shot in the book, and I had to look at it 3 times. I was like, no, that's not really him, is it? Wow.
I got to tell you, it was such a one of the people on the team who was in charge of medical things. So, you know, if anybody got shot or anything like that. He turned to me at one point and he said, how you doing? And I said, I have actually developed a medical condition. And he said, what's wrong? Did you eat something that didn't agree with you? I said, no, it's a little more serious than that. I said, ever since I set foot in Afghanistan, I said, do you know what priapism is? I said, I've had a very interesting condition ever since I've been here. This is incredibly exciting. And I haven't been able to relax since I've been here. Do I need to explain what priapism is for your listeners, Dr. B?
Yes, because I, being the doctor that I am, obviously I know what that is.
I told him, I said, basically I've had an erection ever since I set foot in this country.
Did you know that, Vinny?
Yeah, I knew exactly what he was talking about. It's the same thing I think I would have if I got to put on a New York Yankee uniform and step out on the old Yankee Stadium where Thurman Munson and Mickey Mantle and all of those guys stood. I think, I definitely would have a Woody the whole time.
and that was it. And I had him going that there was something wrong with me until I told him that. And then everybody on the team cracked up. They thought that was hysterical.
You know, I'm looking at this picture in your Haji wear, and you know what? I can kind of tell a little something there in the front.
You're looking a little too close, Doc.
Well, you know what it is? He has the gun very well positioned to block his a priapism or whatever you're talking about.
What's the term from your Islamic porn that got you kicked off YouTube? I was a little jihad.
Yes.
Yeah, no, there's nothing like going out and being involved with guys that smoke bad guys for a living. I mean, these guys, all they do is kick ass and take hyphenated names. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Did you witness Taliban getting killed?
No, I did not see any firsthand Taliban getting killed. That was not part of my deal there. I saw Taliban. If it came down to it, I mean, there would have been some killing going on if it happened, but that was not the goal. I was not participating, going out on, you know, operations where there was a high likelihood of that happening. I mean, these guys were thorough professionals. And
right. So
there were a couple times I got left at the safe house where they said, hey, you know what, you can't come along on this one. Yeah. And if we're not back by this time, pick up the satellite phone, we dial this number, and somebody will come and get you out.
Did you, while you were in Afghanistan, did you find Osama bin Laden?
No, I didn't, because he's not in Afghanistan. He's in Pakistan.
Well, then why
so
weren't you? Yeah, why weren't you in Pakistan then? Why don't you? Why? What better publicity could you have gotten if you, author Brad Thor, comes back to America with the apostle in one hand and bin Laden in the other?
You know what? That's why you're Dr. Blockstein and I'm only Brad Thor. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Maybe for the next book, that's what I will do.
How will this impact your writing books going forward, Brad?
You know what? That's a great question. I really feel as a writer that I've gone to an entirely new level with The Apostle. I've enjoyed all the books I've written, but this book was a completely different experience. I think it's absolutely changed me for the better. I think I've taken a big leap forward, but at the end of the day, it's going to be for readers to determine whether that's happened. I just feel I'm coming at the material from an even more exciting angle now, and I think I've raised the bar for myself. I think it's going to make it more difficult for me, more challenging, which is going to make the writing process more exciting. I do this because it's fun. If it was easy and not challenging, it wouldn't be any fun for me. So for me, I've personally raised the bar for myself as a writer, and I think it's just going to make for more exciting books as I go forward. A lot of people stagnate. They start kind of backpedaling in their work, but I keep trying to raise the bar for myself, and I think that makes for a better experience for the readers, which is what I'm all about.
And it's a damn good thing you don't write science fiction, because I don't know how you would have gotten yourself to Neptune.
I have no idea either. Absolutely no idea.
I just have some more Afghanistan questions, because it's just fascinating to me that you were out there and you were basically on a secret mission secret from everybody except for your wife. What were the living quarters like?
Well, we weren't. We didn't stay on any of the forward operating bases. They were safe houses in different villages, so they were mud walled compounds called koalas, and it was interesting. It was an incredible experience because every twig cracking, every noise, every dog bark, you worry, is that somebody, are they going to come over the wall, what's going on? And it was, you have this heightened sense of acute, you have this, your senses are just heightened. So you hear things, you smell things, you see things. It was a pretty intense experience, but being out in Indian country, as the guys called it, was incredible. And to meet good Afghan people who absolutely hate the Taliban. The Afghan people were fantastic. I ate Afghan food the entire time I was there. The hospitality I was shown by Afghans was amazing. I didn't want to leave, and I would love to go back.
You didn't want to leave? I mean, you were living in mud huts, and I'm sure there were no bathrooms. It must have smelled horrible.
Well, in some places there were bathrooms, in some places there weren't, but you know, again, it's like, okay, you got to play for five innings, now it's time to go. And but that's the secret, I think, to really having great experiences in life is always to be left wanting more. I think that makes it really worthwhile. I mean, you know, you stay long enough for as long as you're there, you're increasing the odds that something bad's going to happen to you. So you know what? I was there. Nothing bad happened to me. The team promised my wife I would come home breathing with no extra ventilation holes in me, and they fulfilled their obligation to her, and I'm back, and I had a great time. And I think it really, that experience will take the reader to a completely different level in the book, because everything I write about is stuff I experienced while I was there.
And you know what? Probably stuff that you can't talk about unless you write it in fiction. I bet we learn a lot more from fiction than we do from nonfiction.
I think that's true. There's a lot that you can do. You can cover so much more area in fiction than you can in nonfiction. That's a very good point.
Sure. Brad, from the chat room, how do you keep all the characters in history straight after all the books? E.B. Holmes says you do very well with continuity.
Good. Well, that's a great question. Mrs. T, my wife, has gone through every single book and has put every single character onto a 3x5 index card. And I have these two black plastic boxes for the index cards that look like you keep recipes in them. And they're all alphabetized. And that's how I do it. So that's how I remember. And anybody listening who is an aspiring writer who's going to do a series character, start that from the beginning. I've been lucky enough that my wife loves the books. She loves rereading the books. And she's gone through and she's basically built me an 8-book database for all the characters, all the situations, what they like to eat, any description I've used for characters. So that's how I keep them straight.
That's great.
That's unbelievable.
Great. They also want to know, do you think you're going to have excitement issues during the book tour?
Well, that's a great question. I suppose it depends on the audience.
will we get to see the Brad Thor?
The Brad Thor what?
But I'm pumped.
Will we get to see the Brad Thor?
Oh,
Brad Thor, I don't know. Please. Just,
was it hard? Was it hard?
Just humor
was
me,
it
Brad.
Hard when you came home from Afghanistan to get back into the real world?
Wait, first answer the first question. Was it hard when you came home from Afghanistan?
Gee, hard. But boy, playing to the cheap seats tonight. Gone blue. Oh, was it hard to get readjusted when I came back from? We didn't come straight home. We went to another country in the region, decompressed there a little bit, and then rolled back home from there. So, it wasn't that hard. I couldn't wait to get back and start writing.
All right. You want to take a call? Of course you do. You're a very sociable guy.
Sure. I'd love to.
Caller. You are now on the air.
Hi, buddy.
Who's this?
Oh, come on. If you don't know my voice by now, I'm quitting. Oh, I will no longer be your
Oh, no. It's hard because it's breaking up a little bit at my end. That's my comrade.
Okay, because he's talking to you like he's your girlfriend. You don't know who this is? What's wrong with you?
Actually, I'm kind of talking like I'm Paris Hilton. You don't know who I am?
Don't you know who I am? Yep, this is the Trollhammer from BradThor.com in the forum. This is Vinny. How are you doing, Vinny?
I'm doing great. How are you, buddy? And how are you, Dr. B and Vinny?
Great.
The other Vinny.
Great.
Well, thank you very much.
We are leading the league in Vinny's right now.
That's it? Yeah, you're
what's up, my man?
Brad, I just wanted to call in and talk to Brad because all these people are in the room here, you know, all the special guests that you invited, and really thank you for doing that, Dr. B. But, Brad, you are a normal guy. Yeah, you're a number one New York Times best-selling author, but you're a regular dude. And I just want to let all the people that are listening right now live, thanks again, Dr. B, that it's safe to call you and call in and talk to you because you're not, you know, you're not this elitist snob type of person just because you write these bestsellers every year. You are a normal human being, and you put your pants on one leg at a time just like Hillary.
And when I do, but then I make gold records, baby. I'm Bruce Dickinson, baby.
Yeah, but Vinny Comrade, the thing is, I am an elitist snob.
Oh, no, you're not, Dr. B. You're a good
guy. Well, but that's a very nice compliment, and I appreciate that. That's very nice of you to say, Vinny. Thank you.
That is very nice.
Hey,
and Vinny, you'd agree that also goes to meeting up with him on his book tour. He has a very extensive book tour. He's going to a bunch of cities. You can find out where on BradThor.com. So meeting up with him is also a pleasure.
Having met Brad twice, I would say yes, it is a pleasure. And I've actually met him and his whole family, and then they're just delightful people.
Well, there you go. Endorsement from the man who runs his internet message board. Thank you.
That's he swings the hammer there, keeps the trolls at bay. You betcha. Thank you, Vinny.
Thank you, Vinny.
All right. I'll talk to you guys later before I get cut off again. Bye.
Just like last year.
Bye.
See ya.
Yeah, I noticed that your people, Brad, didn't get you to Memphis again.
Oh, to Memphis. Well, I think next year we actually wrote down a whole bunch of cities that I'd like to go to next year that I haven't toured in. So there's places like Little Rock and Nashville and Memphis and Louisville and Lexington, a whole bunch of neat spots that I'm really looking forward to. And California. I've got a lot of people complaining that I haven't been back out to California for a while. Putting together a tour is a hard thing. There's a lot to coordinate with that, and unfortunately, you can't go everywhere. A lot of it has to do with bookstores that want you to come out and where you pull big crowds and so on and so forth. But we've got a really neat tour this year and the opportunity to meet lots of people. And you know, and next year we'll try to hit new places.
What's taking so long with the movies?
You know, the movies. It's very interesting. Hollywood still hates George Bush. The people – Hollywood should be its own planet. We have not had a problem getting movie producers who say, this stuff's fantastic. Brad, your books, the Brad Thor thrillers are great, and they would translate into great movies. So you get producers who say, okay, let's make them. And then when they go to the studios – excuse me, the studios – don't want to make any movies that show Americans triumphing over evil,
Islamic bad guys. I don't necessarily buy that because look at 24. 24 has been on for seven seasons, and it's a very successful franchise for Fox. Why is that getting through and nothing else is?
But that's television. That is exactly where I was going to go, was Hollywood normally is a world of copycats. That TV show is done very, very well, and you would think it would be the blueprint for other success. Yet those idiots in Hollywood do crappy, crappy films, pardon my French, like Lions for Lambs, Redacted. You know, and the only time they've shown The War on Terror in a good light as far as heroism and bravery is stuff like the World Trade Center film, Flight 93. And what happens at the end of that? We lose. We lose American lives in those movies. They will not do the equivalent of 24 as a movie. And it's they're so flaming liberal. They're so out of touch with the rest of the country. And if they did take my books and turn them into movies, they would have incredible success. There are people across, you know, there are people who exist in this nation who don't live in New York or Los Angeles, and they tend to have a lot better sense than the idiots in Hollywood. And I tell people in Hollywood they're idiots to their face.
What do they do to your face?
Well, I soften it a little bit, but I tell them they have no sense. You know, idiot is a little bit strong, but I tell them that they're absolutely foolish. They're putting their idealism, which is misplaced idealism, ahead of their bottom line. It's just, it doesn't make sense. It is completely unpatriotic, and they turn up their noses at what they consider flyover country, and it doesn't make sense. Americans want to see their ideals and their values triumph. You look at all the great propaganda films, pro-American films that were done during World War II. Frank Capra, Why We Fight. They did a version for the troops and a version for citizens. And yet Hollywood has been absolutely derelict in its responsibilities, and I do believe they have a responsibility to promote American exceptionalism. And they're so whacked out, liberal, left out there. It doesn't make sense. They've turned – the left in this country has turned national security into a partisan issue. You know what? When Al-Qaeda comes for your kids, they don't care if you're a Democrat. They don't care if you drive a Volvo. They don't care if you voted for Obama. You're an American. They're going to kill you. They're not going to ask what your party affiliation is. And so this kind of stuff is an American issue. This is a national security issue. This is not a political party issue.
Would you ever – consider running for office?
You know, I've been asked to I've had people probe and ask me if I would consider it. Yes, I would consider doing it. Is right now the right time for me to do it? I don't know. It's a really, really hard decision, because it's not just me who would have to run. It's my whole family. I have two small children. I'm married. It would take a lot of time away. And it also takes me away from my books and from writing. And that's the other thing. I'm under contract for three more books with Simon & Schuster, and I have to honor that agreement, and I intend to honor it. And I want to keep writing my thrillers, but I'm very concerned. And let's face it. Hey, you no longer need to really have much experience to even be president in this country. So that excuse is out the window. The bar has been so dramatically lowered in this country. And you look at the scum that we have in political office. I don't want to sound like a hypocrite. Our country needs people who will stand up and be good leaders. And I have to tell you, when I was approached recently for running for office, I considered it very seriously.
What office was it?
I dismissed right away.
What office?
You know what? It was a pretty serious thing. I've promised that I wouldn't go public in
did you
because I don't
did you have conversations with Blagojevich?
I never spoke with him. Never spoke with anyone on his staff. I did not discuss pay for play or buying the Barack Obama's vacated Senate seat. Are you kidding? I wouldn't even walk on the same side of the street as most of the scumbag politicians in Illinois. And as far as I'm concerned, there aren't politicians anywhere I'd probably walk on the same side of the street of. As far as I'm concerned, they are all guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah. So then why do you want them to have experience? It seems like if any experience that a politician would have would be as a politician. Why wouldn't we want the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker to be our elected leaders like it was in the early days?
I agree. As a matter of fact, when I was approached and I had several meetings discussing whether or not I would want to run for office, I said, listen, I think that it should be an honor to serve. I am highly suspicious of anyone who wants a career in politics, because you're not about serving the people. You're about getting reelected at that point. And I said, here's the deal. If I do say yes to this, and I'm not saying yes, I said, but if I do say yes to running for office, I'm going to campaign on term limits. I want term limits. People, it should be an honor to serve, you go home. It should not be about consolidating power and building your war chest and getting reelected time and time again. So I said, and I'm also going to campaign on, I told him, if I do this, I would campaign on, it is incredibly debasing for me to have to spend time with politicians, that I'm going to climb into the swamp, but I'm doing it to serve my country. So, you know, it would, don't be surprised if you do see me in politics at some point in my life, because I think the time is, we really are coming back to, now is the time for all good men and women to come, not just to the aid of their party, but to the aid of their nation. These people we have, you know, it's funny, there's a gentleman with the, I believe it's the International Association of Chiefs of Police, his name is James Corey, and he just came out with a great article where he took all of these character traits from the FBI Behavioral Sciences Unit from psychopathic killers, this charming, smooth talkerness that they have, and the lack of a shame mechanism, that they don't feel any remorse, they don't feel any guilt, they can justify anything away. And he said, you know who's got that in spades? You know who most closely represents the personality traits of serial killers? Politicians.
Politicians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So,
you know, what we're seeing is it doesn't matter what party you are. They're all liars. They all try
exactly.
to promote something that they can't promote in their own homes. You know,
it's two sides of the same coin. There's no difference between Republicans and Democrats anymore. I just don't. There is no difference. And we're getting rushed down this road to socialism so fast. And it's. Everything's a crisis. Everything has to be done. These idiots in D.C. are signing bills that they haven't even read. And, oh, it needs to be done now. It needs to be done now. Boy, if we don't do this, unemployment's going to soar to 8.1, 8.4%. Now Obama's saying, well, it's going to go into the double digits. Well, thank God we passed the stimulus bill and stopped it. Oh, wait, we didn't stop it? Uh-oh. You know, this is ridiculous. And it's why I go to tea parties. It's why I seriously considered running for office. Our nation is in bad shape, and it's because of those, as Mark Levin said recently, those bastards, pardon my French again, we have in Washington. They all suck.
But you know what, Brad?
What?
We're better than Iran.
Well, yeah, we're a lot better than Iran. And how about the fact that Obama finally pulled the invitation for 4th of July? I mean, oh, my God. Goodness, you know, he wants everybody to like him, and he finally pulled that. I couldn't believe that to celebrate the birth of our nation, first of all, that we were inviting the Iranians, and this the invitation went out for them to come to our diplomatic missions around the world and celebrate 4th of July. I was stunned that that went out. That's even before the elections, but that Obama left it dangling for so long. Finally, he did the right thing and said, you know what? We're about liberty. We are about democracy. We are about freedom. And we really don't want to celebrate those American values with people who are the antithesis of that.
Right. And we only want people in America who will buy the apostle. So if you're not going to buy it, stay home on 4th of July in your own country.
Well, and you know what? I should probably at this late point in the interview actually tell your listeners what the book is about.
Yes, please do.
The apostle
book?
Is a book I've wanted to write.
Is there a book?
There is a book. Yeah, this is not just me ginning up my my campaign for political office. I've wanted to write this book for a long time, and the basic short storyline is that every politician has a secret, and when the daughter of a very well-connected, politically connected family in D.C., when their daughter gets kidnapped abroad, the president is forced into an ill-advised and dangerous rescue operation to keep his secrets hidden. This family, who's so connected to the president, knows the skeletons in his closet, and they end up blackmailing him into doing this operation that everybody is saying is a bad idea. So that's the basis for this book. And what I did was is I set the kidnapping offshore, and Scott Harvath, my main character, my covert counterterrorism operative, comes and is assigned basically this almost suicidal operation where the government is saying, you know what, here it is, we have to use you because we have to have deniability and great, best of luck doing it. And what ends up happening is he's put in a situation where they say, you need to get her back, and the bad guys want a certain terrorist traded for her. And they send him over to conduct the exchange, and this goes against everything he stands for. He does not want to trade one of the world's worst terrorists to get this woman back just to protect the president and his secrets.
Wow. Wow.
That's
so that's
why,
it. I think
and that's why when you read page one, you're reading page two and three, four, five, six, seven, 20, 25, 30, 40, 50.
Right.
You just keep going.
Right. Brad, well, I can't thank you enough. You're the best. You are the best.
My pleasure. It's always – I always enjoy doing my first interview right out of the box with you, Dr. B. Thank you for everything, and I want to encourage everybody to come and join us at bradthor.com in the forum there. We got some great – we have a lot of fun. I have tears streaming down my cheeks every day laughing at the stuff that gets posted in there. So, and I want to thank everybody from the forum who's listening tonight and all those people in the Blogstein audience who I haven't met yet. I hope to see them at the bradthor.com website and also hopefully on book tour. The tour dates are on Facebook or on my website. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, go out and meet Brad. He's very personable. He might even buy you a beer. Go out and get The Apostle. I'm telling you, you're going to want to read this on the 4th of July. Otherwise, you might as well move to Switzerland or Sweden or the Netherlands because you're not American. If you're not buying this book and reading it on the 4th of July, you are not American. You're either with us or against us. And that, sir, is grounds for being against us. Brad, I thank you so much. Remember, if you ever do run for office, I have audio of you talking about your raging boner.
Oh, well, that's the end of it.
There goes that dream.
Yep.
We'll all be back
that's
next.
That's the sound of my political career dying.
We'll be back next week with all new Radio Happy Hour. Vinny Bond, thank you so much. Brad, you are the best. I'm going to leave you all with the song Push by the great band The Steps. Good night, everybody.
See you next week.
Allah Akbar.